The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? It's been a tough weekend. I hate to see what society is becoming. I hate to see the slop. The algorithm on Twitter is giving us absolute slop, even from our side of politics. The quality of the information lacks. People are unreliable. There's been, for example, for 2 or 3 days, it's been memeing hard. This idea that the DHS X account was started in Israel. As soon as I saw this, I thought, well, that's interesting, but it could very well be fraudulent. You know, it's very easy to make a fake screenshot showing, well, the DHS originates from Israel. It was debunked within a few hours of popping up this story. And Nikki Tabier, who is an employee at X, said, no, the IPs are from the U.S. and the DHS has always logged in from the U.S. But for 2 or 3 days, there was a lot of small accounts and even bigger accounts like Mike P., a friend of mine to an extent, repeating that story that the DHS account was located in Israel. But it's a fake screenshot. The employees at X have looked over it and they say, no, it never. That's never what we displayed. Sean B. says, Papa, do you like to watch ghost adventures? It's funny. What is it, ghost hunting? I'm not aware of any of this. I don't watch. No, I guess I've not been having Netflix for... I think I've been having Netflix for 2 months in my life. So I guess back then there were some ghost chasing choices in Netflix, but no, since then. But I never watched any of the ghost paranormal stuff. I watched some of the conspiracy stuff and some of these documentaries like the moon, there's something weird on the moon. I watched some of this. It can be kind of fascinating to consider crazy ideas like this. But the paranormal ghost scanner stuff, I've never been into it. I don't believe it to begin with. Secondly, it's not reliable. Thirdly, it's not that fascinating. Lauren says, 2 pardoned G6 rioter were arrested last week. Andrew Johnson was charged with sexual abuse of an 11-year-old. John Banuelos was charged with kidnapping and aggravated sexual assault. Eek. Okay, I don't care. I think, yes, sometimes an event like January 6th will capture types of personalities that are just prone to get in trouble. So I'm not surprised that even if you get unfairly treated as part of your involvement in January 6th, I'm not surprised that the people who tend to get unfairly treated in those circumstances also have some degree of criminal tendencies, and it will show up when you free them. Look, it's what it is. I mean, makes me think about Christopher Cantwell, makes me think about other people on the right. They have an anger temperament of sorts, and they will get in trouble. If it's for ideological purpose, they'll be yelling ideology while committing crimes or being violent, and then if it's outside of this context, their anger still shows. That's not my kind of behavior, but I understand there's a part of the male population that's just anger driven, and they will fall into criminality on various occasions. Minty Pro says, is this just a stream about not caring? No, I mean, it's just a regular news review. Nothing exciting tonight, but I find it relatively exciting. Minty Pro says, and talking about not caring. No, I don't know what I've said in the last 6 minutes that you would interpret that I don't care. I care about lots of stuff. Minty Pro says, didn't you do a stream on the Egyptian planes? What was the verdict cause? I never watched that. Well, that's what I'm about to say today, which is Candace Owens, it's very interesting, this branch that she's developing of a kind of French aspect to the death of Charlie Kirk. And let me tell you, her timeline, her communications with Charlie Kirk, and the whole event implying a triangle between the French government, the U.S. government, and Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk. It's like there has to be some relationships between these things happening. So here's the latest revelations by Candace from Friday. So there was a time in 2024 where the U.S. government was talking publicly about Ukraine. The Ukraine-Russia war will be solved. We are on the path to a peace deal. And there is a point at which, I believe it's in somewhat like November 2024, where Charlie Kirk contacts Candace and says... Or that may not be 2024, but in any case, there's a point at which Charlie Kirk contacts Candace Owens and says, look, I need to talk to you. The White House wants you to stop claiming that Brigitte Macron is a man. And the whole peace in Ukraine relies on this, so it's important. So basically, we had... the French government being so pissed at Candace's coverage of the Brigitte Macron rumor, which I'm still not sure that she's a man, but I find her coverage interesting. Candace Owens talked to Charlie Kirk about it, started jungling with the idea, do I stop? Because there's a point at which, okay, that's an interesting journalistic story and free speech and all. But at the same time, there was an opportunity for her to stop and perhaps help solve the Ukraine-Russia war. The French president, Macron, was very much at the forefront of the peace efforts. I remember he was speaking with Putin, speaking with Zelensky. He was making the alternance between the two. So they asked Candace to shut up, and once they saw this didn't work, amazingly, they activated a whole strategy, and within seven days of Candace receiving a request from the White House to shut up, a French company bought the hangar in Wilmington where the Egyptian planes flew right around the times of Charlie Kirk's murder. The Egyptian planes that are somewhat in mesh with this French company because they spent days at their hangar. That is stunning, because when you look at the correlation between the timelines, you realize that the French government had been really worried about what Candace was doing. And this is one of our revelations, is this timeline, where basically she was communicating with the French documentarist Xavier Poussard, who was the French guy who was at the forefront of this story, this whole story that Brigitte Macron is a man. And as soon as she was in contact with him, even if not talking about it publicly, somehow the Macron learned about it in November and started a lawsuit, started threatening lawsuits against her, even to an email address that she didn't even read, because they send the email to a club address, reading club address that she doesn't read. So they missed the threat, but she was basically targeted from the very beginning she started touching this story. So we have so many mixings of timelines here. Charlie Kirk somehow was used as the intermediary from the Macron through the White House, through Charlie Kirk, to try to whip Candace Owens into not talking about the Brigitte Macron story. That is important. Another thing that's important is that the TPUSA guy, Clevin, I believe, or Kelvin, or whatever, Clavin, he spoke to Candace Owens on the day of the murder of Charlie Kirk, and he said, it should have been you. It was supposed to be you. So there was understanding back then in the close surrounding of Charlie Kirk, not only that Charlie Kirk was exposed to a certain degree of risk of assassination, but they also had the conception that it should be Candace, that basically Candace is the problem. And the friendship between Charlie Kirk and Candace is one of the things that's annoying people in power. Also, she is correct that her and Tucker Carlson, and Tucker Carlson has independently confirmed this, that after the killing of Charlie Kirk, they were told, you're in trouble, you're on a list, be careful. Charlie Kirk may not have been the last one. So all of this, combined with the Egyptian planes' bizarre flight patterns, combined with their hanging out at a French hangar, reserved by a French company 7 days after they asked Candace to shut up, she might be putting her finger onto something extremely important here. At this point, I'm like 50-50 on whether Candace Owens will end up solving the mystery of the death of Charlie Kirk. Not that I don't believe that Tyler Robinson didn't shoot, but I think that it would be very surprising to me, or at least given the circumstance and the current evidence, I tend to believe that some dark forces were operating above Tyler Robinson and had ordered this event in some form. Maybe contributed to it through psyops, through mental control, or maybe paid for it, or maybe were rooting for it so hard and propagating information about this so hard that they somehow caused Tyler Robinson to take action that day. It is absolutely fascinating. I believe that her reading of timelines is extremely important at this point. She also points about the bizarreness of "see you in Valhalla." What a bizarre comment by Kash Patel. "See you in Valhalla." Everyone was like cringing. But now that she reanalyzes this and she shows, you know, there were a certain number of military activities, practices of some sort, shooting competitions of some sort to qualify the soldiers of the U.S. side in kind of international collaboration at time. And it was called Mission Valhalla. And it's like, wow, is it possible that Kash Patel saw here a phrasing that was fit both to say goodbye to Charlie Kirk, but also perhaps through some sort of unconscious linking, saying to his foreign collaborators and other armies, "See you in Valhalla," in the sense of "see you at the shooting practice" of Mission Valhalla. I don't know. In any case, it was very bizarre what was done by Kash Patel. John Drake says, I don't think Indians make it into Valhalla. Yeah. Which is why it was like doubly bizarre, because, okay, you're supposed to be a government agent of a Christian nation to begin with, saying Valhalla is bizarre. Now you're an Indian also. And Indians, I don't know that there's a single Indian in Valhalla. Valhalla is generally thought of as a kind of heaven for kind of Greek European heroes, I guess. The place where warriors ascend in some sort of paganistic culture. I don't even know the exact origins of it, but that's more what Valhalla is. To hear it from Kash Patel, that was very bizarre. And now there are people, some journalists, who are confirming that the fears of Candace Owens that she may have uncovered an assassination plot against herself. And we have Emeril Robinson here. Other journalists have been confirming this by speaking to the government. They confirm that Candace did give information to the FBI that she was about to be killed because there would be a contract on her head, and she believes she has the trace of the money of that contract, as well as the names of the assigned assassins that, and I believe, if I understand correctly, one or two of these assassins would be in Canada right now. Wow. Let's read her message here. 2 days ago, I was contacted by a high-ranking employee of the French government. After determining this person's position and proximity to the French couple, I have deemed the information they gave me to be credible enough to share publicly in the event that something happens. In short, this person claims that the Macron have executed upon and paid for my assassination. Yes, you read that correctly. More specifically, that the green light was given to a small team, a national gendarmerie intervention group. I am told there is one Israeli that is on the assassination squad, and the plans were formalized. Again, this person provided concrete proof that they are well placed within the French government apparatus. Further to this point, this person claims that Charlie Kirk's assassin trained with the French Legion 13 Brigade, with multi-state involvement. Journalist Xavier Poussard's life is also at risk. This is deadly serious. The head of state of France apparently wants us both dead and has authorized professional units to carry this out. I ask that every person retweet and share this. I do not know who in the American government can be trusted, since this source claims that our leaders are aware, but I have more specific information, which is definitely verifiable, should they care to reach out to me. To the brave official in France who did this because they were so moved by the evil of Charlie's public execution to risk their own life, may God bless you. Truly, let all be revealed. So I don't know for sure. Is Candace Owens the victim of a scam? Maybe. Entirely possible. But I tend to believe that that this story is realistic. I tend to believe that she is capable of distinguishing between a trap, a scam, a false information, and actual information. And I do know that money is being shaken constantly in international networks to control information spreading, to control public speakers. I know because I've been at the top of the world in terms of, you know, talking about subjects that some people don't want to be talked about. And so I know that this is very, very regular. Part of the course, it's not always going to be money to assassinate you. There's always budgets to write hit pieces about you, budgets to ruin your life, budgets to give you local trouble with authorities or call the CPS on you. That kind of thing happens all the time. And sometimes they will send people in your life to try to get you to commit crimes. So they will try to get you in trouble. If they know you have a weakness, they will try to exploit that weakness. Marby Dog says, is Candace the most dangerous woman in France? Absolutely. Absolutely. The most dangerous woman, but I am the most dangerous man in France because I'm currently working on a book. I have 100 pages written, White People Food, and this will completely dethrone France as an empire of culinary supremacy. And from now on, it will all be JF. It will all be, what does JF recommend to cook a pork knuckle? So I'm also a threat to France. I hope that I will not get killed. Sharp says, just put the chickens in my greenhouse for winter. The greenhouse was a JF designing. Oh, okay, so you copied my idea of doing a greenhouse. Well, that's great. So now you got a greenhouse and I don't. That is how it turned out. But I'm happy if my passion with the greenhouse has inspired you. Ty Rogerson says, 4 pages on offal. Yes, I have plenty of recipes on kidney pie, kidney meat pie, kidney in a sauce, liver. Of course, I will cover all of this. I'm impressed because I'm going through and I did a lot of work on White People Food this weekend. And I'm now at 100 pages already written. They're already all designed, they're placed. Now I have some revision to do because sometimes I jump quick and I jump to the next page without checking all of the spelling and stuff. But my basic layout is already designed for 100 pages. Perhaps I'll get to 250, 300. It's where I see it headed. So it's going to be a book that you have to pay a little more than a usual book because it's going to be lots of pictures, lots of investigation of the phenomena of European and European decent food. Defenestrator says, taco in a trash bag is the epitome of Mexican cuisine. Yeah, and I've been including it because it's been popularized within white circles of cowboys up to where I live in Alberta. I had never encountered a taco in a bag in Quebec or before in my life ever. So I was very impressed when I came to Alberta and discovered this food item. Now, I do acknowledge in the writing that it's a Mexican origin, but White People Food doesn't mean food that wasn't ever touched by anyone else. It means food that is integrated to European culture. It may have stemmed, some of them have stemmed from outside influence. And all that's important to me is that when they are outside influences, I want to label them. For example, the smoked meat sandwich of Montreal comes from the Jewish deli, New York style culture. That's okay. It doesn't necessarily make it exclusively non-white food. It's food that white people are appreciating, that's fully integrated to their culture. And when you actually dig deeper, you realize, well, even those sandwiches that were brought by the Jews to the east of North America on the East Coast, they ultimately were inspired by German culture from which they learned. So sometimes Jews will transmit an element of culinary culture from one European country to another. Marby Dog says, once we have all the recipes, then we will rule the world. Yes. Minty Pro says, Minecraft Studio is coming together. Torch looks great. You need another one. Oh yeah, I need to cut the squares for doing the rest of my setup here on my left. And then I'm thinking maybe put the revolutionary phenotype here. Maybe put I have another torch maybe that I can put here. Maybe I can put White People Food here. So we're gonna, but I'm taking my time because it's like I can't dedicate too much effort to this. I have my family life. I have to prepare the show. Those are my priorities. X now flags post with manipulated media label if they contain doctored videos or images intended to mislead users. I'm happy that this is being developed. I'm happy because the leftists, you know, with this whole disinformation thing, they send the other way. They used authoritative positioning to really resolve debates that were legitimate, like the COVID stuff. Like, I want to know whether a piece of media that is being presented by these accounts that are making millions of impressions, I want to be protected from this. I want to be protected from something that is obviously false, that everyone would agree is false, but that some people are being deceived by it. I don't want to be told by an AI or by a central authority that the vaccine certainly works, because that is open to debate. What's open to debate, don't try to convince people with central control. But what's not open to debate, what's very clearly fake edited videos, I'd like to have a quick way to know, so that way I can skip and I cannot even watch it. And I can block the accounts that publish too often those things. A new X feature where user accounts are based as exposed, a wave of profiles falsely claiming to be in Gaza while soliciting donations during the ongoing war. So I enjoy this feature. I think it's a great idea that Elon Musk had, because you had Indian accounts trying to scam Americans. You have so many Indian accounts presenting as white females for the purpose of spamming DMs and trying to have sexual discussions. It's like super annoying. And you know, it's so disgusting that they use white face, really. And I feel offended by this. You're stealing the looks of a culture that you don't even have for the purpose of scamming people in that culture. And yeah, there were these other cases where I was seeing these accounts saying, I'm in Gaza, I need food, blah, blah, blah. I was never retweeting those because it's like, how do I know that? And there were a lot of them that turned out to be scams. They were not even located in Gaza. There's currently a kerfuffle between Academic Agent and Avaricom, a creative dreamer, captive dreamer, that's his name. Over the year, people have told me that Avaricom will pick fights on Twitter and then plead in group chats for others to come and defend him. What is the excuse for this worm-like behavior? And no, the fact that your head looks like a cartoon worm head is not a valid reason. Well, so basically the essence of their conflict lies on the fact that Captive Dreamer, he's always been trying to flirt with race consciousness and right-wing discourse. But whenever it comes to the question of Zionism, he's like, he doesn't engage on it. Or if he does engage, it's in the defense of Zionism. And it's he tells these things like, oh, you're obsessed about Israel. And that's it. Very annoying, this guy, because I don't like people who flirt with half-ass ideas. But you can see that they have some other agenda hidden. You can see how shiny it is when their difference of attitude and behavior shows on this particular question. Shadowed by Susan says, is Captive Dreamer based or a silly idiot? Well, that's the eternal question with this guy. And so I've kind of, I've not been interested very much in his content or in retweeting his tweets. because he always gives me this feeling of being on the fence on certain things, and I don't like this. You should have a position. It has become so mainstream that if you're a public commentator, you should have a very clear position on Jewish influence in politics, Israel, Zionism, etc. There's only two sides of the fence to fall on. Genesis says, JF, what value do you see in non-STEM university programs? Well, what value? I mean, the vast majority, absolutely no value. Now, the thing is, 99% of the people who are in universities right now, in these programs, do not belong in universities. That's the big problem. I don't take issue in principle. Like, rewind 100 years into the past. I don't take issue with the fact that there are a bunch of super genius artists who are fascinated about anthropology, and they build the Department of Anthropology, and they attract 5 or 6 students a year, and they're all really, really intelligent, fascinated people around anthropology, and they want to read about it. That's all they care about. Anthropology is fun. I don't take issue with this. That was the way the university should work, which is it needs to be a sacrifice. You shouldn't be paid forever by the state for doing this. And it shouldn't be a cycle where we expect we're going to pack these classes every generation. And we're going to send you whatever quality of people we can. We're going to pack more and more people. Now you end up with such an absence of selection that what is the condition to enter the university in anthropology? Well, you have to basically just have finished your high school and in Quebec, like I've done your cégep. So basically pass just regular basic test and you're in. We don't need that much anthropologists. And anyways, the people that are filtered through these systems, they are not of particular quality. So this is where the whole quality of the system loses. It's not because there was a correlation 100 years ago between whether you go to the university and whether you're a productive, intelligent being, that you can maintain this correlation by attracting flows of infinite non-selected generations of students. This is where the university becomes a scam. The university had a selective value when it was selective, and it lost that value when it became non-selective and when it became kind of a reason to be paid every year. That's what basically professors do. They find a reason to be paid every year. And it can be on the research side, or it can be on the teaching side, or the administrative duties. And it's a whole system of, we're going to create needs. Oh, we have a need here. We have 300 students who applied for anthropology. Now, I've seen people come out of these humanities, if you want to call them, or social sciences. And I've seen people just come out very quick of these programs and become manager at a grocery store. In fact, the manager who had employed me at Maxi when I was working at night to face the aisles had a BSc in anthropology. Never used it, and he quickly came out of the university system and immediately began working productively into something that society needed. So it's not dramatic. People do get out of these programs, and but the thing is that the time they lost in it will never be recovered, and you are losing a lot of time. Now, if you're fascinated by anthropology and it's really deep within your heart, then go do the anthropology BSc. it's probably not going to serve you. You're probably not going to become an anthropologist. But if it's fascinating to you and you're willing to lose the time, sure. Justin McDaniel says, why not just fight the anti-white villainy signaling regardless of its source? Sure, I'm all for it. Sean B. says, can the U.S. make a policy to only welcome white people and then the minorities we let, like 0.01% of them, in out of all immigrants? This touches a question that has been the subject of debate. Asha Logos was critical of Nick Fuentes for saying, because recently Nick Fuentes said, this may annoy people when I say this, but the immigration fight has been essentially lost. And it doesn't mean we can't fight to get into the system and try to veer it our way to the extent possible. But largely the immigration fight, the idea of completely eradicating legal or almost completely eradicating legal immigration in the U.S. is basically lost. Now, Asha Logos is critical of this statement by Nick. Let's just hear what he had to say first.
Nick, I'm a teacher at the high school I graduated from. In 2007, our graduating class was 94% white, and 18 years later, in 2025, wow, it's 19% white. I did some research, and the biggest elementary school in our district has 8% white first grade white population. Mind you, this is in suburban Ruby Red, Boise.
Wow, that's crazy.
Smoking going to Amish sent $30. There you go. Almost all of your takes are rational.
That's why I say, you know, when people talk about immigration, a lot of people don't like to hear this, but when it comes to immigration, it's sort of over. That's why we want to infiltrate politics. When people say we'll sacrifice everything to like get moderate immigration restriction, it's like, what do you think you're really preventing or stalling? It's kind of a done deal. And that doesn't mean I'm saying we shouldn't still keep fighting or, you know, whatever. But it's like when people say immigration is an end all be all, it's make or break. It's like we kind of lost. White births have been 50% of all births for 13 years now. You know, we got 10 million illegals. None of them are going back. You know, maybe if we're lucky, 1.5 million might go back, you know. So you hate to talk like that, but that's kind of a battle that is, it's kind of done. And
Asha Logos is critical of this. He calls it nihilistic demoralization slap. He says, I'm curious as to what is reason for counter-signaling the massive and growing remigration movement around the world really is at this all-important moment in history. Completely uninspiring, nihilistic slap. We can find a way to fix the demographic crisis, and we will. Well, I think that, you know, Nick has a point here. We have to understand that the demographics race war, and by that I mean the race, the running toward, you know, outbreeding the others, has been lost. And it's not that it's been finalized. Whites are still a majority, but it's been lost in the sense that if you see the trend, you see the next generation, you go into an elementary school in Minnesota and you'll understand just how lost it is, just how fucked we are. And I agree with Nick on this. Now, I believe that also. So what is the proper response to it? Well, the proper response is not to delude ourselves into a political project that will be like, we're gonna make America 95% white again. Or we're going to do remigration and Europe will become white again. That is not happening overall. Now, the difference of attitude between Asha Logos and Nick Fuentes probably stems also from their positioning. Because I can totally understand Asha Logos speaking like this from a local northern perspective. I don't know. I don't remember. Is Asha Logos an Australian or European? I don't know where he lives, but I know that I think he's outside of the US. So I think he's coming at it from a European perspective and more worldwide perspective. Now, from a worldwide perspective, including Sweden, Finland, Hungary, including, you know, even you can dream, Northern Germany, Switzerland, including Northern Canada, you realize that, yes, there will be, there is still a hope, even if we've lost the control of our nations down the line. There is still a hope for these places. But see, Nick is in a very different position. Nick is a diehard Chicagoer. So he's a diehard man of Chicago. In Chicago, he finds himself at the intersection of, well, white America, distantly, but mostly black America, and then the proximity to Canada and the proximity to basically a country that is spamming its own people with a flood of its own Indian migrants. So if you are diehard Chicago, I would say yes, from Nick's perspective, it is absolutely legitimate to say the immigration fight is completely lost. There is no way you're going to save certain places of America. That's my point. Is there a way you're going to save Sweden, Northern Canada, Finland? Probably. Because you're working alongside natural forces. It boils back to the point I made, the case I made with my phalange ID, which is that think of the white world as being protected by invisible armies. And the cold plays a big role in determining where the phalange ends, where the line of soldiers will be strong enough to push back against invasion. And yes, I do have hope. I share the hope. I share the nihilism of Nick Fuentes on saving our countries as they stand. But I share the positivity of Asha Logos and many other movements that are enthusiastically talking about remigration. Now, I don't think you're going to get remigration out of our nation because of individual rights. You can't just take a citizen and deny their rights because of their color. That won't happen. But there will be something like remigration in the form of reconcentration. And there will be something like places that are so northern that immigrants simply are not interested in living there. So I see big hope on that side. Thank you so much for the donation. The super chats are very appreciated. I've been starved of super chats for 2 years on Rumble and Odyssey. Typically low super chat amounts and much less super chats just because people don't like the platforms. I'm happy to see those yellow super chats shining in my regular chat again. Bhutan Bear has sent $10. He says, immigration sits in Canada worse than we know. Spoke to a white South African aircraft mechanic today who couldn't bring his wife over from back home. They applied twice. Meanwhile, Indians everywhere. Oh yeah, that is. It's like it's harder for white people to pass through the immigration process than for non-whites, because non-whites, they have their networks, they have their agents. You know, there are in every big city of Canada, there is an immigration agent, and he's Indian and he's bringing in Indians. And these immigration agents, they are there to coach you on what works. So it's like, yeah, they're going to give you the whole recipe. You pay them, I don't know how much they paid them, maybe $1,000, maybe more. And they will basically help you and basically do the application for you and tell you all of the keywords you need to use that they know will work. And there's lots of employment-based temporary status. So the trick that is often used is, well, enter through being hired by some other Indian manager at Tim Hortons. So now you're entering Canada, you're because you're hired, because Tim Hortons need you as an employee. And now once you're in, you apply for a change of status, you get a girlfriend, maybe you have a marriage plan, or maybe you have some other reason to stay. And that's how they pass first and then stay. Science Mans says Kazakhstan went from 30% Kazakh in 1960 to now over 70%. This was achieved by immigration of non-Kazakh and most importantly, a higher birth rate. Sure, it's possible. You are faced with the fact that the birth rate in America is not advantageous for whites. And it's like, I've been making that case again and again. It's the generational time. As long as our women are making children at 35 years old, forget it. Forget it. You're not in the game. Because if Indian woman and Muslim woman and all sorts of other races, if they make their children at 18 years old, 20 years old, by the time you've just maintained yourself, they doubled. They doubled because they made children, and by the time you get to your children, they got to their grandchildren. Now, that's how you populate a nation. It's by having sex between 18 and 25. If you don't do this, your people will disappear. Campbell Soup exec belittled poor customers. Yeah, so there's this guy who, Robert Garza, a former cybersecurity analyst from Monroe, Michigan, has filed a lawsuit against Campbell Soup Company. And he has a recording of the Campbell exec that says, I don't even buy our own soup anymore. It's crap. It's for poor people. And who wants 3D printed meat? It's crap, industrially processed meat. And he's got a point, you know, I don't associate Campbell cans to being very high quality or high quality at all. It's true that when they sell you a cream of chicken, you wonder, to what extent are we actually talking about chicken? These little gray bits, that's chicken. Okay, I'm willing to believe that there may be some chicken DNA in there. Something tells me there's a lot of added stuff and industrial processing before getting it. So yeah, and this I describe in White People Food. France culture is amazing in terms of canning. They have the concept that, yeah, you can can a duck confit leg. You can can a full cassoulet with pork belly and sausage. You can can a liver. You can literally can a block of duck liver. You can can goose gésier. You can so much things. But here in North America, this is what I was explaining in the book. In North America, I associate canning with lower quality. And here you have a confirmation by the guy of Campbell himself. It's like, yeah, you know, it's possible to can something that is worth $20, $40 in a can. The French do it. Now, you arrive at the French grocery store and the can is like four legs of duck. And it's like 1.5 liter. Oh, $40. Can you can? Yeah, you can. You can. Can. Yeah. You can the can together. You can, yeah. Can you? Yeah, you can. Candace. Candace super chat says, Candace isn't worth the fallout of a hit. I don't know. I don't know. Like, think about Charlie Kirk. I wasn't I wasn't finding Charlie Kirk a super important man before his death. It wouldn't really have struck me that they would want Charlie Kirk dead. But now that he's dead, you realize how the game plays out after his death, you know? And it changes your view. I think Charlie Kirk has gained much importance through his assassination, in a way, because his assassination made people realize of how important free speech is, how a personality of like Charlie Kirk can veer things for America one way or another, and how his own questioning around what he would support, what he would not support, was very important to the outcome of the next generation. Graphene OS has announced that they are quitting France, citing unsafe climate for open source tech. So Graphene OS is this open source OS for Android phones, if I understand correctly. I've never used it, but I find it interesting. I had never heard about it. Does it mean I can install it on my phone to have more privacy? So it's a privacy-oriented system for your Android phone. And there started to be hit pieces in French newspaper saying, you know, this company is starting to be a problem because they are allowing end-to-end encryption and they have their own servers and they don't keep any trace and logs. So we're going to have to handle them in a different way than we handle the other companies. So they started being afraid. And they now left France, and they have installed their server actually in Canada, in Toronto. So maybe Canada could become a hub for liberty. Maybe. There is Rumble. You know, Chris Pavlovsky is a Canadian. I believe that some of the Rumble infrastructure is in Canada. The U.S. is a little... competition is hard, and it's not very clear that freedom of invasion of privacy will be preserved, because we have all these corporations of big tech just collaborating with the police on the everyday. But will there be a future Switzerland of the internet in the same way the Swiss system was the shadow system for banking? Will we have a Switzerland of the internet in Canada? I think it would be, if the Canadian authorities were intelligent, they would absolutely do this. It's perfect positioning. You know, Canada is kind of a liberal thinking country, loose on beliefs, and, you know, I've been having less problem in certain places of Canada than I did in the U.S., despite having a First Amendment right in the U.S. So it's something to think about in terms of the future of our country. We could have a significant infrastructure, internet infrastructure, if liberty and privacy was to become valuable. And on top of it, we have cooling. We have a natural form of cooling. So if you build servers, you have the winter advantage, free cooling. And then we have also electricity, which is we produce a lot of electricity because we have to keep our populations heated, sometimes with lots of electricity. So we have power. We have also have power in Alberta in the form of natural gas, which is a byproduct anyway that we need to burn when we pump oil. The teacher of the year that was beating her son, she's been the person who filmed the video and reported her is 24-year-old Jackson Staples, who was seeing his little brother having to endure her abuse. Staples was now she was charged with willful abuse of a child under 18. Again, I don't have a super strong position on this. It seemed to me that children correction, physical correction was a thing, that it's legal. But it's like people choose to be offended in by certain things and they're not offended by other things. I think that the jurisprudence on this is very unclear. It's not clear at all to me whether some degree of physical correction is accepted. I think it is, in principle, legally. But then if you look bad in a video, they go after you. I don't even have a strong position because I'm not for physical correction in general. I'm pretty sure that this young man probably didn't do much to deserve this punishment anyway, because the problem of punishment always, the problem of violence, is the abandonment of authority to someone who's less intelligent. Like, this mother is probably less capable of guiding her child than he is himself in life. So always you always have this problem with authority, that at some point the authority is grabbed by someone that's stupider than you, and they have their own conception, their own crazy conception on what you should do and what you have to do, and you have a different one. A classic reader says, what do you know about the boy with rare condition that gets world first gene therapy? Well, in general, I'm against gene therapy. I think we should absolutely avoid starting to play with our genes because it tempts us toward the revolutionary phenotype. But I don't know the specific story you're referring to. You're going to have to give me what's the name of the disorder? What are they trying to heal? Marby Dog says, woman in authority will always abuse. This was over the line of acceptable corporate punishment, in my opinion. That's what I hear. That's what people are telling me. But what then is corporal punishment that's acceptable? I'm not clear. Because it seemed that there were movies back in my days in which there would be some scene of corporal punishment. And it was a father just swinging with an English sports paddle onto the ass. It seems that her little belt hits here are less strong than what I would expect in a 90s comedy about corporal punishment with a wooden paddle. Now, because please understand, a belt doesn't hurt that much, especially through clothes. There's not really a way where you're going to hurt someone with a doubled looped belt, okay? Because it doesn't carry energy. It's not heavy. Now, there's a way, maybe if you use the extremity of the belt with the metal thing and you swing it very hard and it accumulates rotational inertia, maybe. But to take a double whipping belt like this and do, it's very, very symbolic in my view. I don't believe that this boy was hurting massively, and I don't believe that he's got massive injuries. Now, maybe I'm wrong on this. Marby Dog says, the hair pulling and the screaming seemed excessive in my opinion. Certainly, this was over the top emotional, and you can argue abusive, I guess, to some extent. I mean, I'm just confused that society doesn't have clear rules if it's going to claim that corporal punishment is a thing. And then you have all this progressive trend rising in new generations that are saying no. And you have people like Stefan Molyneux who are radicals of anti-violence. I don't even know where to stand on all of this. Because I understand that there are certain behavioral problems. There are certain children or wives who are so sick inside of them, and they will wreck your life from the inside so hard that if you don't have some sort of a tool for punishment, if you don't have a little, you get in the corner, you're not going to get your game today because you did this. If you don't have some tool, they're going to walk all over you and just break your life. Sean B. says, Papa, do you think the U.S. could take over Mexico and take their land for sending all the immigrants? Win-win. We get to a land to live on. And if Mexicans were seeking asylum in the U.S., now Mexico is the U.S. Bro. We need to talk about this again and again because you guys are not getting it. You guys are fucking not processing what's happening, okay? Map of white people percentage. In the world, countries. This is extremely frustrating because to think that Mexico would be the solution in terms of land is to misunderstand. Now, I'm having difficulty getting the map that I want. White people percentage of population in the world, graph, map, countries. Okay. That might be what I'm looking for right here. So, I want you to understand something. Can I get a zoom on this? Open image, zoom. I want you to understand something. This is necessary for the survival of you and your children and the next generations of white people. If you don't understand this, you will die. This is the ancient world. This is an experiment of planet Earth that has been lasting 200,000 years. That gives you the final result of what always happens. We call it Africa, Europe, and Asia. This is how the world ends up looking no matter what you do. How does it look? At the equator, there is all white countries. Now, weirdly, the white countries, the countries that are appearing in color white, on this map are less than 1% white in population. So basically, around the equator, you have black people. And then, if you go slightly more distant than the equator, you have what? You have brown people. Brown people. Brown people. Brown yellow people. And then you get further away from the equator and you have whitish looking brown people and brown people and brown people and brown people and brown people. And now you start heating up your society. You start giving social welfare, immigration benefits. And now the brown people and the black people, they move into northern regions. Such that this map is not even relevant anymore. It's probably outdated. Because the reality is we've heated up those countries and we've made life in the winter easier. And so brown people move and they move and they move and they move. And at the end of this process, no matter where the specific line between white countries and black countries is, it ends up being it's in some place. And it has to be at a certain distance of the equator because the equator, given its heating property, the heat there, the climate, it attracts and it's the place where black and brown people live and they like to live and they know how to live there. They know less about how to live here. So all of this to say, this is what the world will converge into. You can know that this is the future. Doesn't matter, really. And this is where even the immigration rates are irrelevant. When the world has a goal, it's going to get there. It's going to get there through whatever mechanisms are allowed. Immigration brings in some people. Then their birth rate inside the country favors them. It favors the brown people to be making babies here and the white people to be able to make babies here. So we know that down the line, these countries will be much more like this. They will be browner, darker. So when you say, let's take Mexico. Well, Mexico is already less than 20% white. There's less than 20% of the population that still has white skin there. Mexico is headed toward less than 1%. So every year they are becoming browner and browner. Why? Because they live under the sun. The sun favors the black person over the white person, pushing away the white person. On top of it, the more non-whites they are, the more they are defensive of their own ethnic interests. They are rejecting of the whites. The whites feels excluded. The white feel that they don't belong in that society. It gets poorer. It gets more crime. And they flee north. Now, you would be absolutely stupid retarded to be having the project of making Mexico the new home for white people. No chance. If there's any chance for South America for white people, it's going to be something like the tip of Chile right here. That's the best shot I'm giving you, because even South Africa didn't make it as a white place to hold on. Now, you can give it to Chile that perhaps they can benefit from being slightly more southern, therefore more pole-oriented. But yeah, the only way white people are going to survive is by fleeing this band of absolute white countries right here, who happen to be non-white, although they're white on the map. So the only way you won't survive if you stay in Florida, I guarantee you. You can make 10 babies in Florida. Their descendants will not be there 100 years from now. They'll either be dead or they'll have moved out. So even for the whole of the U.S., when you look at the equatorial height of the U.S., well, there's part of the U.S. that is as dry and climatically hot than North Africa. Never forget, if you live in Florida, you are more southern than some parts of North Africa. Do you understand why I'm telling these people maybe you should start considering to move? You are more southern than North Africa, where Arab peoples live. You are more southern than Libya if you live in Florida. This is not going to last. And I'm seeing it as I write my book, White People Food, because there's a whole area of the U.S. here that has a complete different culinary tradition than the entire rest of the white world. They eat much less fat. They drink unsweetened tea, iced tea, so a refreshing, hydrating drink. So they have adapted. They have adapted to non-northern living, but they live more like Africans as a consequence. They live more like Mexicans in many culinary ways. So Noah, your question is absolutely stupid. To conquer Mexico, why don't you go conquer India? Well, it's because there are Indians. Well, why don't you go conquer Mexico? Well, it's because there are Mexicans, and no matter what you do, you'll be outbred in those places. White people have always historically survived in northern regions protected by the winter, and that is the only places we will ever survive. It's not to be discouraging that I say these things. It's to be realistic. And call me out in 100 years if I'm wrong on this. There will not be white people left in Florida in 100 years. I guarantee you. The equatorial distance doesn't lie. Raven Cafe says, "Hey, Jeff, I hope you've been well. Longtime viewer who's been on a bit of a hiatus. Well, welcome back. Thank you for being here." Finally, as a last news item, shutting down our gaming center and shop down this month. The lease is up for renewal and the rent is insane for Western Pennsylvania. We took a look at the economy and couldn't take a chance on another 3 to 5 years. It was esports with retro arcade. Shop was in the front and sold mostly anime gaming toys, collectible stuff, manga. No floppies, not a single person asked for Western comics the entire time we were open. We ran it for 4 years and didn't talk about it much because we didn't want our employees to get harassed by terminally online weirdos. Wild that we had to think about that at all. So they had this little collector item, geek computer shop. Yeah, I knew these things in the 90s when I was younger, but I don't know that there's a great future for them because the world is getting virtualized and, you know, your target population, the geeks, precisely do not depend on you to have their place and their own gaming setup. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you for being with me. GM for the People says, "The winter strat assumes the ongoing basis of our competitive advantage is our cold adaptation. But we're not supposed to talk about how we're gods of war in the public space." Well, you know, good luck with wars, but no matter the amount of godness level of war achievement you think white people accomplish, never forget. We never colonized to the point of whitening North Africa. We never colonized to the point of whitening India. We never colonized to the point of whitening the Middle East. And so it's like, you can. I mean, even in modern times with modern bombs and modern intelligence and the full power of the American Empire, we didn't even colonize Afghanistan.